This is a reading of the last lecture of a course of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Pastoral Medicine, published by Steiner Books also with the title Broken Vessels. Lecture 11. Dear friends, pastoral medicine, as we think of it here, will only be recognized as something from spiritual research that has meaning when mankind once more possesses a common consciousness of a spiritual realm, containing positive active forces. For, naturally, in an age that has evolved and shaped materialism, it is not conceivable to the usual human being that anyone would so have related himself to the spiritual world that he could have seen in it something worthy of notice. This truly happened, however, in the old mysteries. Individuals saw into spiritual realms and found knowledge there that led to valuable curative measures. And what we still have to say today to round off our studies may perhaps provide a connection to that old mystery wisdom for the medical stream that should now emanate from the Goetheanum. Indeed, this impulse is understood most correctly in its historical connection, if what is intended here is thought of as having developed out of the research methods, although of course quite different in form, and out of the artistic healing practices of the old mysteries. Obviously, dear friends, you will have to regard what has been offered in this short course as just a stimulus. In a certain sense, just the first chapter, the beginning of a pastoral medicine that will develop further through the work that is still to be done here by Frau Dr. Wegmann and myself. So first I would like to point out how the initiates in the old mysteries described their path of initiation, particularly that path that was pursued at the place where the mysteries were most involved in the secrets of healing. Actually, all the mysteries were connected with secrets of healing, but some more than others. They were all connected with them because healing was regarded as related to the entire evolution of human civilization. There were deep reasons for this. A man of those ancient times said to himself, "When the human being comes down out of spiritual worlds into the physical earth world through conception and birth, the soul spiritual entity undergoes a transformation by which it is able to form a physical human body." We have described how this achievement takes place for the first time through the activity of the individual during his first 7 years of life. His first body had been given to him through heredity, the body that in the course of his first 7 or 8 years is entirely stripped off. Thus it was conceived very exactly in the ancient mysteries. A man came out of spiritual worlds into the physical sense world. But there was a universal consciousness that man does not in the first place unite with his physical body in the way that was originally intended, if I may use that expression, by the spiritual powers who direct that part of the world to which humanity belongs. It was always believed that through some anomaly of the general evolution, the forces which a human being inherits overpower, in a certain sense, the forces which he brings with him through his individuality from former earth lives. This seemed to show a lack of harmony. It was said, if there were complete harmony between soul and spirit and physical body in earthly man, then death would not have the form it now has. Also, there would not be illness coming in the way it now comes. Illness and death were regarded as the symptoms that show that man has indeed more to do with the physical earth world than was originally intended for him. Although today this can no longer be completely understood, still it is an extremely profound idea in which there is very much truth. For it is indeed so that the moment a person reaches even to a slight degree a higher level of consciousness, he sees at once that, for instance, death is quite different in character It then appears to him as a metamorphosis rather than the end of a phase of life. Therefore, for the entire ancient consciousness, the education of the human being was related to healing. The entire educational process, in very ancient times of human evolution, was thought of primarily, in a certain sense, from the medical point of view. And connected with this was the consciousness that the mysteries united the professions of physician and priest, both of whom should be concerned with the healing of human beings on the earth. Usually in olden times, physician and priest were united in one person. This could only happen out of the old instinctive consciousness. Today it would not be possible, at least not as an accepted custom. This consciousness of the importance of healing, which was strong even in normally healthy persons, was related for every human being to his knowledge that after the metamorphosis he would undergo through death. He would be guided through his life between death and rebirth on his path to the sun by souls who on earth had been physicians or priests. The first need of every human being after death was to find the sun path, because there he would work out part of what he had to experience between death and rebirth. And these first steps had to be shown him by a physician or a priest. So it was thought in ancient times. This was included in the deepest mystery wisdom. For us today, this wisdom must be regarded differently, because the old methods are no longer suitable for us. However, they are capable, at this present point of time, of being renewed. And indeed, that renewal is to be attempted right here. Dear friends, when an ancient initiate described his initiation, he would say that after he had crossed the threshold, he was first made acquainted with the activity of the elements. In olden times, quote, elements, was the name given to what today would be called physical conditions, that is, solid, which was called earth, all fluids, which were called water, everything aeriform, which was called air, and which included everything gaseous, and everything to do with warmth, which was ascribed to the warmth ether, and which was called an element. This is all something of which the modern physicist says, there is no such thing. For him these four elements do not exist. For him there are from 60 to 80 elements, and they have qualities. Under certain conditions in the world, one is fluid, another solid or gaseous. The condition of warmth belongs to all. What was described as an element in olden times does not exist today. There are now only qualities of things. The qualities have no existence of their own. What today are called elements are actually only real in the coarse, tangible physical world. And what in olden times were called elements were understood not as reaching down into tangible matter itself, but only to the intangible, living activity of matter. You see, it was of no particular importance to an ancient physician whether something was this or that substance with this or that name. Naturally, this is important, but it only becomes so after one has first obtained full view of something else, of the living, weaving activity of the substance. Thus one can study a substance in a place where it is exposed to weather conditions. The ancient physician laid great value on studying a substance while it was being exposed to the weather, to the whole earth process. Also, he took care that he did not simply take some substance out of the mineral kingdom if it could be obtained from the plant kingdom. In other words, he looked at the position the substance had in the world process by virtue of its living activity. But to understand that, one needs to accept the concept of the four elements. For then it is of prime importance in what temperature a substance becomes earth, for instance, in what temperature it becomes solid or fluid or air. That was the important thing in olden times, to observe what world process must happen so that some substance or other would take on a particular form. That was the first requirement. After that, the substance was examined without restriction. Today, one starts out from the substance. Formerly, one started out from the process. And in fact, any substance is only a process suspended at a certain stage. Formerly, one was above all concerned with the whole weaving life within the material substance. And so the initiate described how he was first led to a vision by which he could see the weaving life of matter, and how it appeared to him as a fabric woven of the four elements. That was the first experience. The second description everyone gave, which presented the second step for them, was this. They were led to a place where they could learn to know the, quote, upper and lower gods, close quote. What does that mean? Dear friends, we have already described that, but in a modern way. Let me read that again. What does that mean? Dear friends, we have already described that, but in a modern way. I told you that if the soul's spiritual entity enters too deeply into the physical and etheric bodies, then these bodies overpower the soul's spiritual entity, and a pathological condition is created, an aberration of the soul's spiritual entity in the physical etheric organism. There is then this pathological situation, that the person has descended more deeply into his physical organism than he should in ordinary waking life, and he encounters down below non-human, sub-natural activity. For only when we have a normal relation between our soul and spirit and our physical etheric organism do we live in the natural world. The moment we descend too deeply, too intensely into physical corporeality, we come into relation with the subnatural. We fall to a level at which elemental beings, beings of higher hierarchies at various stages of their development, are all active in mankind. This is simply a fact, that we come into relation with those gods who are unfolding their activity below the level of nature. And so how would an ancient initiate have spoken if he had wanted to use a more neutral expression, veiling the facts so that no one would understand him except other initiates? How could he have implied that he had been led to the lower gods? He would have said, I have learned to know the nature of human illnesses, for that leads to the lower gods. Now look in the other direction, at the life of the saint. This also, as I have shown you, can be at the borderline between normal and pathological. It can happen that the soul's spiritual entity goes out farther than it should, enhancing, so to say, the sleep condition. The ancient initiate described his introduction to this state as meeting with the upper gods. So put schematically, there's a drawing, this corresponds to the fact, there's a straight line up and down at the top. On the right side it says spirit, below that supernature, in the middle Christ and then nature next to it, below that subnature, below that father. Nature, subnature, supernature, visionary life, through the clairvoyant faculty that leads an individual into the spiritual world. This the initiate called, quote, meeting with the upper gods, close quote. Now, dear friends, when we speak of upper and lower gods, someone can very easily entertain a false idea that it concerns rank. You must think of it in this way. If I simply say nature, subnature, supernature, illness, visionary life, then I am tempted to think of the lower gods as being of a lower order. But that is not true. In reality, it is like this, and there's a drawing, sort of concentric circles in a way. Imagine here we have nature. Then above, it leads to a circle. Below, it leads to a circle. And what is above joins what is below. If we draw the circle larger, we get this. Still larger, this. and if we continue to draw it larger, we finally get a straight line. A piece of circle that continues on after it has gone into infinity comes back from the other side. This shows that the terms upper and lower are not to be understood as signs of rank, but simply as different ways that the gods come to human beings. They have been thought of as working in equal rank with one another, of striving to unite at a point in infinity. Therefore, everything in olden times that was either illness or clairvoyance was thought to show that if someone gains an understanding of these two human conditions, he will then see into the spiritual world. One way to know about the spiritual world was to become well acquainted with illness and with clairvoyance. When we understand this, we are able to bring into our own modern age what was present in human consciousness in olden times. If we ask ourselves what can be identified in modern consciousness with the realm of the lower gods, the answer must be the being whom we call the Father when we think of the Divine Trinity. The Father belongs in the most eminent sense to sub-nature. How are we to think about the Father God with truly spiritual comprehension? Dear friends, let us consider the human being, first in his day-waking consciousness, then in his night-sleeping consciousness, and let us compare the two states. We know that in his full waking consciousness he is living as he has been placed to live within the order of this physical world. Just as the earth has had earlier stages of evolution, Saturn, Sun, Moon, and will undergo further evolution, so must man himself be recognized as the result of those earlier evolutionary periods. In this sense, he belongs in his waking state to the earth. By his nature, he stands within the sphere of the earth. In waking condition, he stands on a level with nature. It is not the same when the human being sleeps. When he is asleep, dear friends, the physical and etheric bodies lie on the bed, and astral body and ego are outside them. Let us look at the physical and etheric bodies. Of what does he consist, this piece of humanity lying there in his physical and etheric bodies? He has, of course, at a more advanced stage, what he received in the old Saturn evolution and the old Sun evolution. That is now further evolved. He has the further development of his Saturn and Sun existence now during sleep. He does not have his moon existence in what lies there on the bed. He does not have that within him. We have to say nature has progressed from moon existence to earth existence. And the fact that the sleep condition is essential to man means that nature preserves, in the sleeping human being, a nature that is now below her, a sub-nature, a nature that only existed during the Saturn and Sun periods. That is sub-nature. That lies at the foundation of all beings through the fact that there is a human race. Man falls during his sleep condition into sub-nature, and from this fall, I have shown you this in these lectures, illnesses appear. That is the realm of the Father God. When we sleep, we enter the realm of the Father God. We enter sub-nature, the realm of the Father. If now we consider human clairvoyance, that presents an illumination of those members of the human being which, during sleep, are outside the physical and etheric bodies, that is, the ego and astral body. When an individual becomes conscious in them, he is in the opposite condition, the opposite pole to illness. And he has entered the realm of the spirit with his astral body and ego. So we can see that the human being is organized on earth in such a way that he is able to go out from nature in two directions, in the direction of sub-nature to the Father, and in the direction of supernature to the Spirit. Since the mystery of Golgotha, Christ has been the mediator for both worlds. He is the one who permeates the world of nature, the one who permeates normal human existence. He is always to create harmony between sub-nature and supernature. Subnature is always kept in balance by the normal course of sleeping and waking. Supernature is kept in balance by those seers who are able to return to their ordinary human life at will. If someone is unable upon waking from sleep to balance what he has experienced in subnature, then there is illness in his physical and etheric bodies. If someone is unable to bring back into his full waking state, into the natural course of his earth life, what he experiences clairvoyantly in the realm of the spirit, then there are soul illnesses or spiritual illnesses. These are the other pole. Let us now consider physical illness. What happens when the healing process starts? The human being is led from the experience of subnature to the experience of nature, from the Father to Christ. For Christ is the spiritual life in nature. That is in reality what the physician does. In reality, it is the physician's task to know how a person fallen to subnature is brought back to Christ after the Father, if I may express it pictorially, has given the leadership over to Christ the Son. That puts into modern speech what mystery wisdom would express. One would say, after the initiate has attained a Christ consciousness here on earth, he is led on the one side to the Father, on the other side to the Spirit. If then he is aware how his path leads from the Father to Christ, he will find on this path all the healing processes. And here, dear friends, the modern mystery begins, the mystery that creates a great world test for real medical science. It is this to which I must point at the conclusion of this pastoral medicine course, so that there shall flow from it what should first of all bestow healing upon the physician himself. We can assume that he will gradually learn the separate healing measures that we have shown in this course, by learning which are the defective organs, and then what there is in outer nature corresponding to them that will work with spiritual force. Thus we introduce spirit into the human body as the healing agent. The physician will learn how it is done in this case and that case. This will all build up for him to a complete knowledge. And this living knowledge that he attains will be different from the current conventional knowledge. If today you open your pathology text or a medical textbook and study it thoroughly, you are no further at the end than you were at the beginning, because, granted you have digested the entire contents, if you did go all the way to the end, but even while you worked at it chapter after chapter, still you were making no progress in your general human attitude. It is the nature of real knowledge that it impels one to grow in one's entire human attitude. If you take up medicine in this sense, and as it was meant in this pastoral medicine course, you will advance step by step, and the result, dear friends, will be nothing less than that you can say to yourselves, now that I have my medical training behind me, I understand all that transpired at the mystery of Golgotha, up to the moment when Christ went through the gate of death. You will understand the passage of Christ from the Father to the death on Golgotha. That is the mystery. One may not believe at first that medicine is related to this mystery, but it is related. It is so truly related that precisely through your understanding of the processes of healing, you will grasp what happened in the cosmos when the Father sent the Son to undergo the death on Golgotha. You will see, dear friends, in the death on Golgotha, not death, but the working together of all that happened at the death. That was not a death, but the overcoming of death and the healing of all mankind. That is the path of the physician, from Father to Son, until the Son dies on Golgotha. All separate pieces of medical knowledge bring one a step further toward the final comprehension of this mystery. Pastoral medicine is not only what the pastor and the physician are to practice together, it is what is to be brought together, so that first, through the physician, one part of the mystery of Golgotha can be really understood. That is the high point, the ultimate achievement of medicine, to comprehend all human illness in such a way that one sees the mystery of Golgotha up to the death as a tremendous healing process. The pathology of evolving humanity and the therapy, the dying on the cross, these will be seen in their true connection when we have real medicine. The priest has to follow all that is experienced by a human being when he leaves his body and enters the other world, the world of the spirit. Thereby the priest becomes more and more aware of the relation of a human being to the Spiritus Sanctus, the Holy Spirit. And his path is that of mediating between the Spirit and the Son, the Christ, of developing theology, so that it will find a way from Christ to the Spirit, from the Spirit to Christ. A great sum of knowledge and life experience can be acquired on this path, along which one has to lead one's fellow men, from the Spirit to Christ, from Christ to the Spirit. Its highest service must be that the successive stages of theology are able to clarify for humanity the meaning of Christ's path after the death on Golgotha. For his going through the death on Golgotha was the great healing event. Then the question arises, what faculty does this healing event create in a human being that will help him to enter the spiritual world? Theology must have, for its crowning endeavor, the comprehension of what is happening to the Christ individuality since he went through the death on Golgotha. Christ's path to Golgotha, the peak of the physician's path. Christ's path after Golgotha, the peak of the priest's path. It seems as if for many contemporary theologians, the two paths have no connection whatever. For there are theologians today who actually do not want to know anything about the risen spirit and the further activity of the Christ. But if we speak in the sense of a renewal of the mysteries, then the event of Golgotha, the mystery of Golgotha, belongs to it. And then we can say, the path by which the ancient initiate came to his initiation could be described in this way. I was led through the elements to the lower and higher gods. The modern initiate would describe it as follows. I have been led through what dissolves the elements into their active processes. The elements are now the chemical elements, 80 of them, that dissolve when they enter into any process. And I am led further to the Father below and the Spirit above. I perceive the activity of Christ on both paths. If you would like, dear friends, to take a summary of this course with you for your esoteric study, then take these words. I will follow the path that dissolves the elements into activity and leads me down to the Father who sends illness to work out karma and leads me up to the Spirit who guides the erring soul toward freedom. The Christ leads downward and upward, creating spirit man in earth man, in harmonious union. When you have become completely permeated by the content of this brief meditation, you will have taken livingly into your spirit what I wanted to give in this pastoral medicine course. That's the end of the lecture, Lecture 11. I will end, though, with my attempt, forgive me, at the German of that little, of that mantra or verse that Steiner gave just now. Ich werde gehen den Weg, der die Elemente in Geschehen löst und mich führt nach unten zum Vater, der die Krankheit schickt zum Ausgleich des Karma und mich führt nach oben zum Geister, der die Seele in Irrtum zum Erwerb der Freiheit leitet. Christus führt nach unten und nach oben, harmonisch, Geistesmensch, in Ehrenmenschen zeugend. The end now of Lecture 11, the end of the course, the Pastoral of Pastoral Medicine by Rudolf Steiner.